And you're going to have some of your CDs available, right?
Yes, Lee's
been. Okay. Sonia will have some of her CDs available. We're very grateful to have her with us. She is a Nashville recording artist and a member of the fellowship, so we're glad to have her. Today's topic is talking about the healing process of forgiveness, and that's really what we're going to be talking about the whole weekend. The end product, the byproduct of working through the steps is hope and healing in the family. And at our particular Woodstock, probably because Dick and I work on it together, I think we have found it important to make sure that we emphasize family recovery. When I first came into the program, it seems like, you know, there was AA and Al-Anon meeting everywhere, and they knew each other. And more and more, we seem to have two completely separate fellowships, and it really is our dream that we'll have more and more couples and families be a part of this weekend. So thanks so much for all of you being here. I am going to start by reading the steps. I wasn't going to do this, but somebody asked me to be sure and read them. My steps before Al-Anon, which are probably what your life might be like if you decided not to work the steps. Number one, I discovered that I was powerful over others and that your lives were certainly unmanageable. Two, came to believe that I was the power that could restore you to sanity. Three, made your decision for you to turn your will and life over to the care of me. Four, made a searching and fear-filled inventory of everyone that I knew and found them lacking. Five, admitted to God, myself, and anyone that would listen the exact nature of your wrongs. Six, became entirely ready to assist you in removing your defects of character, except when to do so would injure me. Seven, humbly, assisted you in removing those defects of character, except when to do so would cause me harm. Eight, made a list of all persons who had harmed me and vowed to get even with them all. Nine, waited and waited and waited and waited for everyone to make direct amends to me. 10, continued to take your inventory and when you were wrong, promptly pointed it out. 11, sought through martyrdom, mothering, managing, and manipulating to improve your conscious contact with me, asking only that you read my mind and carry out my wishes. And 12, having had a complete physical, emotional, and spiritual breakdown as a result of this type of living, I tried to drag all those I love down with me and get sympathy and pity from all who would listen. And thank goodness for my husband who's back at the door and others, I decided to work the other steps. But that probably was my life before the program. I would like for all of you, as the three of us share this morning, to think about if there's anyone in your life you've been unable to forgive. You know, is there those names that might pop in your head? Maybe you've done inventories over and over again. Maybe you've even done your eighth and ninth step with that person, but there's still something in there that just grabs at you, and you've had a hard time truly forgiving them, truly letting it go. I also would like for you to think about the people that haven't forgiven you. You know, those people that you would really love to have reunion with, that you would love for them to let you back into their lives. It's Christmas time, and I'm always reminded this story. It's not mine, but it kind of is. Dick and I, our oldest child, many of you know him. His name's John C. or Santa C., depending on the time of year. And Santa happens to be up in Eatontown, New Jersey right now at a mall. But when John first got sober, he was estranged from his family, and he ended up getting divorced. And in the divorce case, he had to sign that he would have no contact with his children. And this was sober, and he was very mad about it, and he didn't want to do it. And his sponsor said, "Have you been a good father?" "No." "You know, you just need to do this. If those kids are supposed to be in your life again, they will." And he went about living his life and went about working his program, and many, many years went by, and he worked in the field of alcoholism for a long time. He retired, and he became a Santa, and he's actually a very good Santa. And a few years ago, he got his pick of anywhere he wanted to go, and for some reason, he picked the Monmouth Mall in Eatontown, New Jersey, because a speaker up there, Alan Gallagher, he had heard once, and he was from Eatontown, New Jersey, and that's how he picked it, just out of the blue. So he was being Santa. He was sitting there, and a young woman came up and sat on his lap. He said, "What's your name, young lady?" And he said, "You know my name, Daddy." And it was his daughter. And he hadn't seen her in many, 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 many years, 30, I think it was. He started crying, and she started crying. He said all the Santa's elves started crying, and the Santa's elves that were supposed to be taking pictures took a bunch of pictures of the reunion, and slowly the buzz kind of went through the mall, and all the people that worked in the mall were coming out to look over the railings to see this reunion. And he picked that mall again the next year, and his daughter came back and brought his granddaughter with him. And he went somewhere else the last couple years, but this year he's back up in Eatontown, so I'm hoping to hear another tremendous story. Maybe his son will actually come this year. I would love that for him, because he has not had a reunion with his son. But he did his work, you know, and somewhere along the line, God brought the reunion. As we talk about forgiveness today, I know that I've had some reunions. I know I've had some people who have passed on, but I know that I did my work anyway. And that's what it's all about. I'm going to invite Sherry up to speak, and then Anna, and then I'll close. And then if anybody has a miraculous forgiveness story you want to share with us, we'll close with those.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sherry Hoke from Louisville, Kentucky. I'm a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon that includes Alateen. And I'd like to thank Dick and Barbara for inviting us this weekend, and Barb for asking me to participate on this panel. When I was growing up in Louisville, both my parents were adult children of alcoholics, I've learned. And in my family, what we did was, if you did something to somebody in our family or you ticked them off, we amputated you. You know, we did not just get mad at you. You were amputated. And, you know, I wonder why I came to this program. I didn't want to be around women. I had fear of abandonment and all those kinds of things. And, you know, and I've learned from step work that, you know, that's where some of that came from. I guess the first thing I wanted to talk about is forgiveness of myself. And Al-Anon's got a little book. It's called As We Understood, and it's a very spiritual little book. And it's got a reading in it that says, "I have learned that today I am a composite of every experience I have ever had, the good ones and the bad ones, so I can forgive myself the mistakes of the past. I have become able to see myself in my proper perspective with God and my fellow man. I have learned not only to know my limitations, but to know and have respect for my capabilities. I can accept praise or criticism from you because you love me for what I am, and I feel worthy of your love. Once, I did not. I have learned to live one day at a time, asking for knowledge of God's will for me each day and the power to carry it out. Knowing that, I must accept whatever comes as His will, and knowing that somehow it is best for me." When I got to these rooms and I started working on the steps, one of the first areas that I worked on was kind of going back into my past. And when I was 10 years old, I was in a car with my sister. My mom was driving. We were taking my grandmother out for a ride because she had her foot in a cast. and we were, it was a beautiful fall day, and we were hit head on by a drunk driver, and my grandmother died that night from internal injuries. What happened in my family after that is my mom just had a hatred, you know, for this person that I know today did not wake up that morning and say, hey, I'm going to go out and kill, you know, this little girl's grandmother or this woman's mother. You know, that it was an accident. That's why they call it an accident. But, you know, that was where I really saw the disease kicking off in my family. And today, God's put me in a room, you know, with a lot of alcoholics. And I love alcoholics. I've married alcoholics. I have friends that are alcoholics. And you know, so then I get to be in rooms like this. And, you know, there's a gentleman that I heard his story. I'd heard his story before, but I got to talk to him a couple years ago when he told his story. And he has never received forgiveness from one of the families that he killed somebody drunk driving. And I was able to go up to him afterwards and say, I forgive you. You know, I forgave that drunk driver that killed my grandmother. And, you know, it's only because of these rooms, a God of grace, and, you know, the 12 steps that you can get to that kind of peace. One of the other things that I learned when I got here is, you know, when I first came to Al-Anon and I heard those steps, I thought, oh boy, I can't wait for him to make amends to me, because I didn't think anything about me having to make any kind of an amends. And luckily I was in some healthy meetings and people told me things like, well, you might not want to just sit around and wait for that, you know, and I didn't, and I went on and worked my steps, and by the time that it came that Bruce made his amends to me, I had forgiven him, you know, for the things that had happened in our relationship that alcoholism did. I knew that I understood, had an understanding of the disease, and that he didn't do those things to me. And so when he, you know, made those amends, my response was, you know, thank you. But when he asked, you know, if there was anything that he could do, I said, just keep doing what you're doing. Because he had been making those amends for a long time. One of the other ways that we use forgiveness in our family is that, you know, when we do something, and I do things too, that I go to my daughter and I tell her that it was wrong of me to do, or I go to Bruce, and then I ask for their forgiveness. And, you know, I can ask for that, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to get it. That's the hard part. But that is a process that we use in our family, and it's been very healing. My mom died about 4 years ago, and, you know, I don't ever remember her ever saying that she was wrong about anything. And so I'm grateful that my daughter can be wrong today, because I've been able to be wrong and ask for her forgiveness. I just heard a guy called Bruce yesterday, and Bruce couldn't talk to him, so he was telling me that he had just gotten custody of his granddaughter. His daughter was locked up, and a few years back he had gone to this judge and been thrown in jail because of his alcoholism, and this same judge ended up granting him custody of his granddaughter about 4 years later. You know, you only hear that stuff in rooms like this. I mean, it's just the miracles that we have. I heard that we were on the plane on the way up here, and there was this whole article about resentment and forgiveness, and you all have probably heard this one, but it said resentment is like drinking poison and then hoping it will kill your enemies, you know. And man, I did that for years. I carried, you know, such burdens of resentments. You know, I had two exes before I met Bruce, and the second one, we had been married about 5 years, and he left me for a married woman with three children, and we had just bought a house 6 months before that. So I was not happy, you know, and so I went years, you know, telling that tale of woe of what happened to me and all that, and, you know, I didn't, for a long time until I got to these rooms, I never saw my part, you know, that I was a sick person affected by alcoholism, and that's why I picked the people that I did. And then when things didn't work out, it was always their fault. You know, I had no fault in it. But today I'm able to forgive myself. When I think that's maybe one of the biggest differences between Al-Anon and AA is that we are told that when we make our list for amends to put ourselves at the top of the list, because most of us have hurt ourselves more than anybody. We judge ourselves harsher than anybody and blame ourselves for everything. And so I did that, you know, not really understanding what that would mean. But, you know, as life unfolds, that mother that I told you all about was very controlling. And, you know, today, when I came into Al-Anon, I would hear people say, you know, my parents did the best they could. And I would sit there and go, yeah, right. And I didn't believe that, but I heard that. And I actually picked my sponsor because she told the story about when she came to Al-Anon that she heard somebody talking about that they hated their mother. And she hated her mother, but she could never verbalize that. And so when I heard her telling that story, I really felt like I hated my mother. So I thought, she's the sponsor for me. So, you know, God uses all this junk in us. He really does to get us to where he wants us to be, I believe. And so, you know, as I started going through the steps and I started working on that wreck and the drunk driver, and I was able to go back, and I was able to put, you know, through God's help and sponsorship, my arms around that little 10-year-old girl and say, you poor thing, look what you went through, because nobody was there for me at that time. You know, my mom was all wrapped up in the court case, and I'm sure she felt like it was somehow her fault with what happened at that wreck. And so in doing so, I was able to come to a little piece of forgiveness, you know, of her and how she reacted to things. Several years later, I actually had to make a separation from my birth family. And it was during that time that we decided that we were going to go to Ukraine and adopt our daughter, Anna. And so they weren't a part of any of that, and it was very sad, and I just did it one day at a time. I went over to their house one day, I walked in the house, and my mom wouldn't speak to me, and something just snapped inside of me, and because of this program, I guess, I just had enough self-awareness or whatever to say, it's not okay to treat me that way anymore, and that branched on one day at a time to a 3-year period. And like I say, during that time, like the last year and a half of that, we had gone to Ukraine and adopted our daughter. And I did a lot of work. I got outside help. I worked the steps and did a lot of work. And I had a lot of anger that I had to work through. And one day we got a invitation in the mail to my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. And by that time, when I got it, I opened it up, and that little kid in me at some point would have been scared, and like, oh, I can't go or something. But I had done enough healing because of you guys that when that invitation came, I said, we're going. I knew it was time. And so we went, and the first time that they met their granddaughter was at their 50th wedding anniversary party. And, you know, I was able to go with dignity and grace because you all helped me with forgiveness. I had been working on that stuff. Now, on their end, you know, not so much. I'm sure it was very uncomfortable for them, but and it was uncomfortable for me. I had a lot of people praying for us that night and that. But there's just so many miracles in this program that I just encourage everybody to keep coming back. I'll just close with one little story. This is just how I am. I'm just an outgoing person, and I go to a meeting that's at an AA club on Saturday mornings, and there's a lot of newcomers. A lot of AAs come to that meeting, and I get there early a lot of times and greet people. So the meeting doesn't start till 11, and there's an AA meeting that starts at 10:30. So a lot of AA men, more than anything, come in early, and they'll come over into our room because I believe there's probably another AA meeting there another time during the week. So I always, you know, greet them, and then I say, oh, are you new to Al-Anon? They're, oh, this is Al-Anon? Oh, wait, I was looking for the AA meeting. And I just always say, well, you know, you're welcome here. And I say, you know, we love alcoholics in Al-Anon. And, you know, and I just did that last Saturday, and I just thought, and I just do it, that's just how I am. And I didn't really ever think about it, but I just thought, you know, maybe God will use that. One man I actually got to talk to, he said, well, why would I ever go to Al-Anon? I said, well, do you know any alcoholics? So that's all we do. We love alcoholics here. We've been affected by them. So that's how we come here to treat our disease. So, you know, I'm just so grateful for these rooms and for the healing and the steps and for a great God. And I'm sure glad you all are all here. And I'm going to hear what Anna has to say. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name's Anna. I guess I want to start out also by doing a reading from what's this book? As We Understood It. In learning to forgive myself, it helps me to recognize that there are times I did not have a choice, just as the alcoholic may not know he has a choice to drink or stay sober. Today, I am thinking with a clearer mind. I am learning to release the choices that I thought were mine to make, which really belong to someone else. In other words, I am learning to mind my own business. And I can relate to that in many ways, because when it says that some of the choices were not mine to make, that really jumped out at me, because coming from Ukraine and being adopted, those were not my choices to make. I had a very, very big resentment over that for a very long time. And I had a big resentment against my biological family. I had a resentment against my adoptive family because I felt that they had taken away my chances of being with my sisters. And I had the biggest resentments against the government officials from Ukraine that took us away. And what I didn't realize till a lot later on was that my biggest resentment was toward myself. I know today, because of the being able to talk through it with program people, working steps, that although I was angry and hurt by the events that happened, that God used them to my benefit. Because, you know, without the government stepping in to help, I might have died of starvation. Or, I mean, we would have had to eventually just fend for ourselves without our parents ever being there. Because who knew if they would have, how much longer they would have lived because of how heavily they were drinking. My biological father, for the longest time, was my deepest resentment because I felt that everything was his fault. You know, he was supposed to be the leader of our family, and he was never there. He never told me he loved me, so I felt like I wasn't worthy enough to be loved or that I wasn't wanted. And, you know, that hurt really bad because I really wanted a relationship with my parents. And I also did not realize that until later on. I had always wanted my parents to tell me that they loved me, that I was wanted. You know, because of being an Alateen, I have come to realize that, you know, that they did the best they could, and even if I didn't feel like it was enough, that was all they could offer. And it took me many, many years to come to accept that no matter how unhappy I was with how my parents turned out, that they were grown adults and they made their decisions. And, you know, unfortunately, there are not many AA programs in Ukraine. So it's not like they had the option to go and get help. They pretty much just had to do it on their own. And you know, I came to realize later on that it wasn't that I hated my father. It was that I was hurt because I loved my dad. I was daddy's little girl, and I wasn't able to show him that. And I mean, part of that was I did have a part in that, because I never tried to tell him how I felt, and that was one of my defects of character, is that I like to stuff my feelings and act like everything's okay. My sisters did the best they could to smooth things over between our entire family. That was quite the job for them. They could have really used Al-Anon. We all could have, actually. Today, I have come to accept that and forgive myself, because for a very long time, I felt like it was my fault that we were taken away from our parents. I thought that I wasn't good enough. And, you know, I felt like it was my fault that we were taken away. So in a way, I felt that I had not only hurt myself, but I had hurt my sisters, because that also impacted them. And I came to realize, almost like Mom, that, you know, as a little girl, there's just things I could not control. And even when I was 5 and 6 years old, I thought I could control everything, because I was so used to being on, we were so used to being on our own, being and making decisions for ourselves. And let's just say that was a big turnaround when I came to America, and I had to learn to give up my control to my parents. That was not easy. But, you know, today I can live one day at a time, and I can live one day at a time, and I can continue to forgive myself. And, you know, because of Alateen, I'm able to do that by talking things out with other people instead of stuffing my feelings. Because when I do that, I know that it only ends up hurting me. And Mom and I have had many talks about resentment, that when I stuff feelings and I get angry, that it ends up coming out sideways, and then it not only hurts me, but other people as well. And I think that's just one of those things that my parents never realized, that the choices they made affected not only them, but also everybody else in some very major ways. You know, Al-Anon has always been there. They were my family now. They have been there to help me heal by loving me and accepting me as I am, no matter what happens. So I want to just thank everybody for being here.
If any of you were not here last night to hear Bruce, Sherry, and Anna speak, I really encourage you to get the CD and hear Anna's full story of her life in Russia, and how the miracle of her adoption happened and how that family came together. I grew up in a family deeply affected by alcoholism. My name again is Barbara Anderson. Good to see all of you. Very, very grateful, Al-Anon. My mother grew up in alcoholism. Her mother grew up in alcoholism. I'm not sure how far back. And my father's family was about the same. Dick and I were in Mount Airy, North Carolina, staying at Andy Griffith's childhood home several years ago, and went to this little museum there, and there was an exhibit called The Tragedy of the Allen Women. And we went in and saw this exhibit about the worst courthouse shooting of all time, and it was perpetrated by 14 men that all looked like my dad, and came to find out that they were all my relatives. So if there was any doubt that I came from family of alcohol, if this is a disease, a family disease, that kind of answered it for me. He came from military generals and stuff, Dick did, so that's just different families. I guess I belonged with him from the start. I came into Al-Anon thinking I had no feelings. You know, I was pretty much taught, I guess it was my mom and dad's own way of coping, that you didn't have anger, you didn't have resentment, you didn't show fear. And because I didn't show any of those things, I didn't show much happiness or joy or anything else. I was just pretty numb. When the cap came off the jug, so to speak, it took a little while. I think I was worse for a while. But, you know, when I think back on who I was and the reasons to get rid of all that stuff, and if you've ever cut yourself and it got infected, you know, it heals over infected, so then they have to open it back up, and it hurts worse than the first time to get all the infection out. And that's sometimes what happens to us when we have to go through and do all this work. I've worked with a lot of women over the years who've had severe abuse in their backgrounds, physical or sexual abuse in their backgrounds, and they just can't even come up with the idea of forgiving their perpetrators. And, you know, my mother grew up the way she did, but she physically abused me in today's terms. You know, in those days terms is what she learned, you know. So I could have lived the rest of my life thinking of myself as a victim, or I could have lived my rest of my life free. And Dolly Parton has a quote, "Get down off the cross, honey, somebody needs the wood." And I just would rather not live my life as a victim. You know, and if we hold on to that, you know, if we hold on to that banner of "I'm a victim," then we're not forgiving, and that person continues to harm us over and over and over and over and over again every day. So, yeah, looking at forgiveness is tough stuff sometimes, to really look at those long hurts that you may have already gone through a couple times in inventories, but never quite gotten to forgiveness, never quite gotten to letting go of. Being able to is freedom. It's happiness. It's joy. It doesn't mean we necessarily have to let our perpetrators, you know, back into our lives. If you were sexually abused, you certainly don't need to go have a relationship with that person again. But to be able to let go of it is tremendous freedom. You know, when I look at look at the four P's of the reasons people don't forgive. And the first one is all about pride. You know, I know, and to a certain extent, this was me. I'll show them, I'll make good, you know. Carrying this banner, I know people who built their whole lives over the resentment towards their parents or an ex. You know, I'm gonna make good because of them. And yeah, maybe they made good, but they still are living a life based on resentment and unforgiveness. Next one is protection. You know, particularly for family members, comes a lot of fear to think about forgiving an alcoholic. You know, y'all might relapse. Well, we might relapse, I mean, if you forgive us. I mean, we can kind of go crazy too. So, but, you know, to be able to, the protection, the wall that you can build around yourself to not forgive that other person because they might hurt you again. Yeah, you might be comfortable behind your wall, but are you living? I wasn't. You know, I had walled myself off for most everything. The next one is power. You know, if I haven't forgiven you, I might be able to manipulate you. You know, some of you I know have somebody in your life who's tried to manipulate you with their anger. You know, I might forgive you if you do this, this, and this, and this, and this. If you jump through these hoops, might be your parents, might be your significant other, might be a friend, might be your boss if they let you go back to work. You know, and then the last one is punishment. You know. I get to punish you because you did these things to me, and I'd much rather punish you than forgive you because then I can't do it anymore. Those aren't things to build our lives on. You know, the freedom that comes with letting go of the past and be willing to forgive, and the honest truth is that we can forgive others. We can't necessarily cause them to forgive us. You know, all we can do is do our work. To be willing to forgive somebody else, you can be willing and still have trouble with it. You know, I discovered this for myself, and then I started passing it on to people I sponsor, and it certainly does work. If you have somebody you're really struggling with, and lately in the last couple years it seems like it's been mothers for the women that I've sponsored, I've encouraged them to write the name of the person they resent the most on a piece of paper, or to write it down every day and get rid of it somehow or other, okay? I actually don't even tell them piece of paper. And it's amazing how creative some of them have gotten, things that I would have never have thought of. One of them wrote the name of her mother every day on a raw egg and went and threw it at a tree. Write it on pieces of paper and burning it, write it on toilet paper and using it. I've had some creative ones, writing it down and burying it. I had somebody write it in alphabet soup and eat it. I'm not sure about that, but that's what they did. And my favorite that I can't do all the time, but it's to go to the ocean and write it in the sand and let the waves wash it away. Write it on something and let a helium balloon take it away. You know, if you're really struggling with not being able to let go, there's something about the ritual for me of doing that every day. Yes, I can say I forgive them, but there's still that gnawing thing that sticks in my gut. There's something about the ritual of doing it. And what I have found is that when the person moves from using the toilet paper to attaching it to a helium balloon to go on vacation and writing it in the sand, they're probably ready to let go now, you know. So that's this visual thing that has helped a lot of people, and it's very simple. You know, certainly if you have a God box, writing the name down and putting it in the God box helps, but this is almost a step further than that. Forgiving somebody and not knowing if they're going to forgive you is kind of like walking into the middle of traffic and standing in the median. It can feel pretty dangerous. You know, there was a roommate I'd had in college that I hadn't been able to forgive, and I tried to find her and couldn't find her, and the alumni office didn't have her information, and I thought I was off the hook. All of her phone numbers were gone, and I was on vacation in a town I'd never been in, and I saw her walking in the mall coming the other way. And they say that if you're supposed to make amends, the person will show up, and that was true here. So I walked over to her and I said, "I can't believe you're here. I've been trying to find you. I know I owe you an amend." I had walked out the day before the rent was due. I got mad at her. We had had a fight about a guy. I can't even remember what it was now. And I probably owe you some money. I looked in my wallet. I had about the amount of money I thought that maybe plus interest I would have owed her. I gave it to her. I gave her a business card, and she never said a word. She just stared at me like this. But she called me about a year later, and she said, "You'll never know what a gift you gave me that day. I'd canceled so many people out of my life just that way, just out of resentment. I hadn't given them another chance. They no longer existed." What was the word you used? Amputate. You know, I had my brownouts. They would just kind of, I'd take the eraser and they'd cease to exist. But the process of being willing to do that is scary, and we have no control over what happens the other side. You know, you can be out in the middle of the median for a long time, maybe forever, but it's still worth letting go of that, because we get our lives back. You know, there's medical evidence that people go into remission from cancers. All kinds of medical conditions can be healed just by letting go of anger and resentment. So why wouldn't we do it? You know, I think that it's interesting, in the first 2-3 years that Dick and I were married, maybe even longer than that, I lived the majority of my life in yesterday and tomorrow. You know, yesterday was the resentments and the things that didn't go so right and how bad my life had been and the what ifs. And and then in tomorrow, and how I was going to manipulate it into being the way I wanted it to be, or how fear was going to dominate, you know, was how much I feared whatever was going to happen. And I'd imagine all the scenarios that were going to happen, that I had missed my own life. You know, we were in a restaurant in Savannah, I think it was last year, and Dick said, "You remember the last time we ate here?" And he was telling me all that happened there, and I had no memory of it. You know, I'm not an alcoholic with blackouts. I just missed my own life. You know, I wasn't paying attention. So, and I don't think that's unusual, unfortunately, for a lot of us in Al-Anon, probably in AA too, that we're just spending so much time forward and back that we miss today. When I first heard the slogan "One Day at a Time," I didn't even know why we had it. You know, makes sense to me. Live and let live. That one didn't make much sense either, because I just didn't have a concept of living my life in the now. And it's a whole lot better. It's a whole lot better to be in my own life. Probably the biggest, you know, and this will be the last. It will take a few minutes to share this story. The biggest resentment that I had had to do with the career field that I had chosen and all that happened in relationship to that. And I'll try to summarize it as best I can. I ended up going to seminary. And the year that I went to seminary was the year that I was to graduate from seminary was the year that the denomination I chose to serve decided to pass a resolution that basically said Eve was the first to sin, and therefore women shouldn't lead over men, and women in ministry would strongly be discouraged. And that was pretty much, it might have even been bolder than that. So I had worked in churches for seven years at that point, and I was graduating to be told basically, you can't do this because you're female. And I had just a little resentment about it. And I went on and interviewed, you know. I went on and looked. I had a lot of crazy interviews. The one that I'll share with you, and some of you have heard it before, but I went to this interview in Alabama, and I do not remember the town or the church or what anybody looked like or anybody's name. It's in my brown out erasure zone. But there was 50 chairs in a circle, then there was one in the middle. And they ushered me in. I had driven from Louisville, Kentucky, down to this little church in Alabama. And they ushered me in, had me sit in the chair in the middle. And the man that was directly across from me said, "We just wanted to see what someone like you, a woman who had had the audacity to apply for this job, would look like." And I didn't know what to say. Now, I've thought of a lot of things since then. But what I did say was, "I hope you're going to pay my expenses." And from this part of the circle, a man threw some money on the floor. And I picked up the money, and I walked out of the circle, and that became God, and I didn't know it. You know, why had God done this to me? You know, why had I chosen to serve God and basically been spit in the face? And it got worse instead of better. It started to fester. And when I met Dick, he was already sober, and he told me he wouldn't marry anybody unless they were in Al-Anon. So I went to Al-Anon to manipulate him into marrying me, and it worked. And I did the Cliff Notes version for a while, just trying to do enough to let him think that I was really working the program. But the reality was, you know, somewhere along the line, I actually had to look at the steps myself. And I loved speaker meetings from the very beginning. The first speaker I ever heard was Jack Sullivan. And I remember his story about, you know, somebody knocking on his cardboard box to collect some money and telling me they're going to make his life miserable if he didn't pay him, and he's living in a cardboard box. And I just loved AA talks, and I loved seeing people's lives transform, and I believed that there was a power greater than me that could restore you to sanity and a loving God that loved you, but I didn't believe that was true for me. because God had already told me he didn't want me. At least that's the way it internalized in my mind. My sponsor told me at the time that I needed to do a God inventory and I needed to write down everything that I thought God had been when I was a child and everything that happened to me in short churches and organized religion, and I needed to do it. As I think sometimes the steps hold hands with each other, and there's something in the step before it or after it that we have to do to be able to let go completely, and I had to do that God inventory before I could do the second and third step. And you know, I started to unravel the things that happened in that denomination had absolutely nothing to do with God. Okay? Nothing. Then I had to start believing that God might love me. And so I kept a God journal and I'd write down everything that happened to me was beyond human understanding. You know, if somebody gave me a call when I was down to tell me they loved me, if I got a card in the mail, if I had the money to pay a bill at the last minute, whatever. And about that point in time, Dick and I had a lot of financial struggles, and we were both involved in service, and we were both a little proud about it, and we didn't really want anybody to know how much we were struggling. And when I look back on it, I think the struggle happened because I had to learn to trust God. I had to learn that God was going to take care of me. And there came a time that we didn't have the money for food, and I didn't think that happened to somebody in the program. And I got down on my knees, and I said, God, I don't know if you're listening to me, but we need help. Please help me. And 2 hours later, there was a knock at our front door, and there was a friend of mine I hadn't seen in 8 months, and she was standing there with 8 bags of groceries, and she said, I just had a feeling you needed these today. So it's not a burning bush, but when I asked God for help, he delivered groceries to me. And that was the moment I forgave God. Did God need me to forgive him? Probably not, but I had to forgive God. I had to let go of that. I had to believe. And I took the second and third step for good at that point. You know, later on, the education that I gotten from the seminary helped me. I'm in my 25th year working in the field of alcoholism and addiction. I never imagined to be in that field. But that's where I ended up, and the education I had helped me do that. And I wouldn't have been there without that. And a little over 2 years ago, out of a dare from an Al-Anon, really, I had an Al-Anon friend call me and ask me to go do communion with his friend, with his brother. He was at Shepherd Spinal Center, and I was going to have surgery, and asked me to go to do communion with him. And I said, I'm not ordained. He said, I don't care. Go get some grape juice and some bread and go see my friend, my brother. So, and he said, by the way, why aren't you? Somebody will ordain you. And I found a non-denominational church that did ordain me a little over 2 years ago. So, and so far, I've done 4 funerals. And one of them was my beloved friend, Tony Curry, who spoke here the first 2 years. What I can tell you is the life that I live today because I'm able and willing to let go of resentment and to forgive others is more than I could have ever imagined. You know, if there's something that's holding you back, you got a whole weekend of speakers to listen to and a whole process of the steps to listen to think about how you might want to go about letting go of that. If there's somebody that hasn't forgiven you, there might be some kind of amend that's needed, you know. There might be some motion you can do on your side. So I want to open up and see if any of you have a forgiveness story, story of forgiveness in your own life that you'd like to share with us. And it looks like Lee has a mic, if anybody would like to share.
1, 2.
Good morning. My name is Michael Austin, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm visiting from Nashville, Tennessee, and I just wanted to share a little bit about me and something that happened to me earlier this year. Part of my story is at the age of 13, I met a man who was 15 years older than me, and I was already active in alcoholism, equal opportunity alcoholic, using whatever I could to avoid sobriety at that age. But I pursued... My life path took me from the age of 16 to the age of 29. I was living with this man because this man liked boys who were 13 years old. You know, that just happened to be my life path. But, you know, the big book, I'm told, you know, we have to forgive everyone everything because I can't live with resentment. Resentment is the number one killer. I had a lot more friends in this room than I realize. Anyway, earlier this year, I have the opportunity to go into jails and to be able to walk back out today, which is a really nice thing for the alcoholic. But I was in a workshop, a 12-step workshop in Nashville, and we were talking about the fourth step. And, you know, getting some feedback on resentments. What about the guy who did this? Or what about the person who did that to me? And I just freely shared with these people. You know, I met a guy who was 15 years older than me at the age of 13, and I proceeded to live with that guy for 13 years of my life. And we had a lot of fun, but it was crazy. I mean, he was an alcoholic still living with his mom. So I not only lived with him, I lived with his mother, too. It was a sick family. My friend Scott out of Nashville said to those guys, I happened to have fortunate to be in the room with Scott at that jail. And Scott opened my eyes up because he said to those men, he said, you can tell by the way Michael just shared that with you that he's free from that. And that's what I get from the forgiveness, is that I get that freedom. And I can share it with you today also. I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Betty Green, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi.
And I'm also a grateful member of Al-Anon. And in 2001, my husband of 38 years filed for divorce. And I had 21 years, and I'm there, oh, my God. I mean, how could he do that? Did I have a resentment? Did I have a resentment, Polly? I also resented professionals because I was dry and untreated alcoholic. I mean, come on. So what I did was I got a $5 red shirt from Sam's, and I embroidered victim on it, and I put a butterfly and a flower on it. So when I looked in the mirror, I could see that I am not a victim. I had to change. I had to continue. I had to start over on the steps is what I had to do in both AA and Al-Anon. So I went to the jail, and I carried the message in AA and Al-Anon, and I listened to them, and I changed. I mean, by the grace of God, one day at a time, continuing to work the steps, I had to look at what I did to that man and how I acted in my family. I was terrible, you know, and I'm still making amends. He's coming around. I sent him a Thanksgiving card and thanked him for all the things he did for me, and he thanked me for that. That's all I got.
My name is Michael. I'm an alcoholic. I want to share about, I never share this. A lot of people have heard the story of my daughter being kidnapped from an AA dance. But the forgiveness process was real long. It took 9 years. It was a horrific experience. She was almost murdered, and just getting through it was hard, and it was long. Everything I knew about God went out the window, and I had to start seeking God at a different level. And my daughter was 3 years sober. She was 18 years old. She got sober at the age of 15. And she just turned her back on God. She just couldn't understand how could God let this happen to us. We're sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're working these steps as hard as we could. How could God let this happen? I'm leaving an AA dance, and she drank again. She was in and out, in and out, in and out. She kept getting new sponsors, trying to get sober again. And every sponsor would say, you have to forgive your perpetrator. You have to forgive your perpetrator or you're never going to get free. And what I have learned is you cannot force forgiveness. You can't force it. What you can do is become willing. You know, just having the willingness to forgive, it will come in God's time. Because it came for me 2 weeks before my daughter's experience. I was speaking in Thunder Bay, Canada, and sharing about this rape. This man came up to me afterwards. He had 2 kids and a wife, and he was in tears. And he said, I was that man. Not really that man, but that's the way he lived. He raped women. He was just he was a bad man. And he found Alcoholics Anonymous in prison. And, I mean, he just has tears rolling down his eyes, and he's telling me all this stuff. And after getting out of prison, and he had his spiritual experience, and this beautiful wife and these darling little kids, and just deep down in my soul, I knew the man he was telling me about was not the man I was speaking to. I just knew it, and I forgave my daughter's perpetrator. And 2 weeks after that, my daughter had to go on a panel. She had a new sponsor who said, let's not even go there. Don't think about it. Put it on the back burner. He did not push forgiveness. And she went on a panel to Metropolitan State Hospital thinking it was Cider House, a detox, but it was actually a lockdown for the criminally insane. And she went in there with her sponsor. When she realized where she was at, she just had a full-on panic attack, especially when they locked those doors. And she just didn't know what she was going to do. She couldn't share about, I mean, these were pedophiles and rapists and everything else. She just didn't feel like she could share about it. And anyway, she said when they started doing the AA reading, she started to calm down. She could breathe. And what she did is she just shared that her life was so horrific that she just couldn't believe there was a loving God. And that something happened to her so horrific, she just turned her back on God. And afterwards, all these prisoners lined up not to talk to the men that had men's stuff to share. All of them lined up to talk to her. And they shared with her their horrific childhoods. And my daughter felt compassion. I mean, to these, what she thought were bad, bad men, she felt this unbelievable compassion. And that's when she forgave her perpetrator. You know, hurt people hurt people. And when she came home, she looked like she had a facelift. I'm so serious, because she always had, her face was always down and angry, and she just looked, she had a look of total joy, and she's been free from that since then. Thank you.
We have time for, I think, one more, and we'll go.
Hi, I'm Gwen from Noonan, Georgia, and a grateful member of Al-Anon. I just want to share really quickly, my father was one of my qualifiers, and he was about 84, 85, and in a nursing home, and we felt like he was really getting ready to pass away. He'd lost his will to live, and I just had an impulse, a leading that day when I went to visit him, and I just told him that I thought he'd been a really good father and all the wonderful things that he had given me, one of which was a really strong faith, another was a love of learning, and that although he had never gotten the chance to go to college, he made sure that my twin sister and I, who they had adopted, also got to go. And he now had 5 granddaughters that were in college or college graduates, 2 of which had master's degrees. So that his love of learning had really made a difference in the lives of a lot of people, and just how much I loved him. And he started talking about his failings as a father. And I said, well, I think, you know, you need to know that you're forgiven, and what we remember is the good stuff. And we left and had a wonderful visit. Well, an hour later, my twin sister came in and did the exact same thing. And he called me later and he goes, you're not going to believe this. I said, yeah, I think it was your day, hon. And, you know, we really thought we were going to lose him that weekend. He lived another 5 years, most of it in sobriety. And he joked around that being an assisted living in a nursing home was God's way of enforcing his sobriety. So anyway, you know, we talked a little bit about healing, physical healing as a result of forgiveness, and I really believe that if he had not had that burden lifted that day, we probably would have lost him. So thank you.
Thank you. I imagine there's a lot of miracle stories. Share your forgiveness story with each other over lunch, and I will remind you that what we say here, what we hear here, when we leave here, let it stay here, and we will close with the Lord's Prayer.